Welcome to the Blood and Thunder podcast on Three Red Kings, brought to you by NTES.
Hello, welcome. Thank you for joining me on this podcast. It's a big match week. We have Ireland versus England in the under-20s, which is happening tonight, Friday, and the main event tomorrow, which is the senior men. It's Ireland versus England in Twickenham, and it's the last hurdle before the potential Grand Slam game in the Aviva Stadium next weekend against Scotland, should Ireland win this game. And it is possible that Ireland could win the Six Nations with a bonus point win in this game as well, which, again, you wouldn't bet against just based on how well Ireland have been playing. But, again, rare enough that you'd win the Six Nations and the, you know, with a game to go. There's been a lot of talk this week. Steve Borthwick was at it again there today, talking about how Ireland are, you know, the best team in the world. That Ireland have, you know, the best team, didn't win the World Cup. And I get what he's saying. You know, you do kind of have to talk up the opposition. You can, you may bet he's talking about upsetting Ireland and fucking sticking a lot of the shit that some people over on this side of the water have been talking, including some people over on the English side of the water as well. But I do think that there is some merit to it. We are playing very, very well, Ireland, you know, without question. At the same time, though, I would look at beating a, you know, 14-man France team who are plainly had the heart ripped out of them with Dupont and Antimac not there. Beating Italy at home, which we do anyway every single year. And then beating a Wales team who are, you know, in the middle of a deep reset. That's fine. It's, you know, it's good. I mean, don't get me wrong. And Ireland have played really well in for large sections of all of those games. But does that make Ireland the best team in the world right now? I suppose if you look at the test teams who are playing right now, yeah, but look, Ireland are top of the Six Nations. Are we the best team in the Six Nations so far? Absolutely, without question. Like I said in Provincial State of Mind the other day, there is an element of feeling like your tyres have been pumped a small bit, if that makes sense. Like, fellas are almost, they're almost killing you with kindness to a certain extent. I don't think Ireland are talking about being the best team in the world internally. I think they're very much thinking about going over and playing a very, very tough test match against England here, which it absolutely will be. I think some of the media coverage that have been from the English side over the English rugby team in the last 2 weeks has verged on hysteria. Will Carling was, and again, look, there is points to what he's saying about you can't get too lost in the data. Sometimes, and I think that a lot of the time, rugby is almost at its best when there's inefficiencies. And I think that England at the moment are shooting for maximum efficiency, and the detail that they approach, and like that all teams approach really the test, you know, like the test arena. I think there's a lack of understanding out there in some journalists and pundits about what the game is like now, the level of detail that has to be there, and the important role of data as well, in finding out where are the best places to play typically, and relating that to your own style, your own team build, and kind of going from there. And I think that Steve Borthwick is a very clever coach. He's coming in for a lot of criticism at the moment because he has England playing a deeply unpopular style of rugby at the moment, which is mainly focused on box kicks and contestables, both from 9 and 10. That is a deeply unpopular way to play the game in 2024. And a lot of the discourse, we'll say, that's been around in the last couple of weeks has been the comparison between the way Ireland are playing the game at the moment and the way England are playing the game. Ireland are passing the ball at an unbelievable rate. The 252 passes, I think, that we made in the game against Wales is one of the highest on record for this tournament. And, well, since they started collecting data points, maybe there was a game in like 1912 where there was 300 passes made. But I think looking at how Ireland are performing, the wins, the manner of those wins, and some of the very, very attractive rugby that we've played, that being juxtaposed to, you know, Alex Mitchell endlessly box kicking and, you know, these high chases coming in and knock-ons and then scrums, which are often reset. All that comes back and it can be very unpleasant to watch, especially if there's lots of that going on. England at the moment they're trying to build a way of playing that they feel can make them the best team in the world. That's their aim. And you look at their run last year from the in the World Cup, from the pool stages, where I think everybody, even I was looking at how they played in the warm-ups and thinking, these guys are fucking garbage. But then when you started seeing them in the World Cup itself, they got more fluency, they got more cohesion, their game plan started to be the kind of rugby that tends to win big games at test level, where they're kicking off a lot, they play very little rugby in the areas of the field where if you make a mistake, it's either 3 points or 7 points, if that makes sense. And they kind of removed all that from their game, and they're very, very fit. They're a very strong defensive team physically. They've got a lot of big guys in their team, especially in the team they've selected for this one. And they will make this game very unpleasant for Ireland. And I think in the last couple of games that Ireland have played against England, let's be clear, like, there hasn't been a whole load between the two teams. And one of the biggest factors in the games in the last couple of weeks or last couple of years between these two teams has been the red cards that England have suffered in both of them. So, like, going to Twickenham, a lot of the talk is that, oh, look, how many England players would get into the Ireland team and all this, that and the other. That to me is rubbish. This England team are more than capable of winning this game and more than capable of making this an incredibly difficult matchup for Ireland, because a lot of what England are doing really well at the moment is the kind of stuff that hurts a team that play the way that Ireland do at the moment. Looking at Ireland's style, and I covered this in the Offensive Ruckwork article that came out Thursday night. I was looking at how Ireland have changed up how they're playing, which is a palpable change from last season. Last year, Ireland's pass per carry rate was lower. This year, it's much higher game on game. We are passing the ball a lot more, obviously. Our kicks are a little bit different as well. We're kicking less per possession. Last year, Ireland would have been firmly in the kind of counter-transition range. But this season, we're heading into on-ball territory. What does that mean? It means that we are choosing to kick the ball less. We are also choosing to play the ball from further out the field. As in, this Ireland team at the moment seem quite comfortable playing 4, 5, 6 phases in and around their own 10-meter line, which again is a high risk play to a certain extent, but Ireland have mitigated that as much as possible. Ireland passed the ball really short. One of the main features of Ireland's work in this Six Nations has been how short we're passing it in general. And if you go and you look at just have a look at the distances that Ireland are passing. We have the shortest average pass distance at 5.9 metres and the lowest percentage of 10 metre plus passes with only 11.21% of all our passes, right? So if you look at England, they're actually the opposite. They are the highest average pass distance in the Six Nations, 6.3 metres, and the lowest percentage of passes that are 5 metres or less. That reflects perfectly how both sides are trying to play this game. England are basically playing off-ball rugby, kick pressure, and the team they've picked is the exact team that I would have gone with if I wanted to play off-ball rugby against this Irish team. England will kick the ball from almost everywhere inside their own half. They will kick most of what happens inside the or outside the opposition 10-meter line. They only tend to go through the phases when they're close to the 22 or if they can launch off a set piece or whatever else. They're a close map to the early Springboks under Razzie Erasmus. A lot of the criticism that they faced this week came from a report, I think it was in the Telegraph or the Daily Mail, one of the two, where a unnamed player was complaining that they weren't training attacking rugby in their sessions, that an outside back only passed the ball or saw the ball once, that they're mainly focused on set piece and defence. And that is a version of Jacques Nienaber's high edge or high outside edge overlapping cover blitz defence. And it's Felix Jones who is implementing that, or his version of it, in England. And it's not fully there yet. Their blitz isn't exactly what it needs to be. There's some guys who are still a little bit unsure as to how aggressive they need to be. There's some small bits and pieces as well with some of the timing on their offsides, where it feels that some of the inside defenders are not giving good reads to their outside defenders, where outside defenders are really uncomfortable blitzing as hard as they possibly can because they're worried about offside. And one of the big things about this the Springbok side is they're actually very good at managing that space and that line around the ruck, so that the fellas outside who are taking the cue from inside are able to blitz really aggressively, knowing they're onside. They can make the read themselves. That's a small bit little thing that I've seen with England, that there's a few moments where, certainly against Scotland, where they gave up space on the outside because they were not able to they weren't able to blitz as freely as maybe they might if the fellas inside them had their line discipline a little bit better. Physically, and I'll just go through their team here now, they have the size to cause Ireland problems on phase play, because ultimately what this the sequence of this game breaks down as is England kicking almost everything to Ireland, kicking it short, relatively speaking, running in and around 25, 26 metres, which is in box kick or up and under Gary Owen range, and then making it very uncomfortable when that ball lands for whoever is taking the ball or what happens directly afterwards. If I was to look at what England are training, I would say for the majority of the last couple of weeks, they've been training their blitz defence and their transition defence. And in the last couple of days, they would have worked on some of their offensive transition. I look at their team here and I'm thinking, there's a few nods here to the fact that they need to be better on offensive transition. And I think some of the selections kind of reflect that. But they will not have been training a whole ton of phase play. You can see that with some of the work that they're doing, where it's quite rudimentary, it's quite deep from the gain line, because they need space. And they need, like, you look at their screen passing, it's actually quite a bit deeper than a lot of the other teams in the Six Nations, because they're giving their playmaker, whoever is in that spot, usually it's George Ford, they're giving him that opportunity to kick. And you'll notice their screen running tomorrow, the gaps that they have between the screen and the runner, way different from the way Ireland are running it. But the reason is that they want to give that opportunity to kick at all times. And I'll just go through their team right now. Fullback, George Furbank, with Emmanuel Faye Baboso and Tommy Freeman as the wingers in that system. They're going to be aggressive. They're going to chase really, really hard. That's going to be obviously their MO from England here, the chasing. And those moments under the high ball when that ball is either batted back onto the English side or dropped from the Irish hand, or they're looking to try and challenge over the ball and work that space. Wales, I felt, would go that way, would try to play that way against Ireland. That's the way they did it against in their two previous games. They didn't have the platform to play that way. Ireland bossed possession early on. I think Wales then felt uncomfortable. They're almost trying to keep Ireland at arm's length. I don't think England will be concerned over that. I think England will be very much backing themselves to kick short and deal with whatever comes in that, you know, that 25 metres of space. So that's going to be a big, big factor. Midfield, they've got Henry Slade and Ollie Lawrence. There was some talk about Manitou Alagi being back fit for this, I think, but obviously not selected. Henry Slade is quite comfortable playing that edge defence. He does that for Exeter, who are running a very similar system. He hasn't been the kind of playmaker, the second playmaker that I think they're looking for as of yet. And I think mainly because they don't have the systems in place for that as of yet. I think they need a strike playmaker. And I think that's why George Furbank is there rather than Freddie Stewart. They need something extra on offensive transition. I think Furbank gives them that. And like a lot of people questioning why Freddie Stewart isn't there. Now, unless there's an injury I don't know about, I think if I was to just look at it from a role perspective, he is not a playmaker. at all. He's really good in the air offensively and defensively, but they're going to hope to try and pressure Ireland. Like, they're really good at retaining the ball, and they will that. When they kick the ball, they retain it at a fairly high rate. But I don't think they need to do that in this game. I think that the big thing for them will be pressurizing Ireland and looking for scrums. That's going to be their big point of difference, I think, here. And that's what they'll be backing themselves to do, because in the last couple of games they've played against Ireland, they've given us a world of trouble in the scrum, and they'll fancy their chances in doing that. Andrew Porter is one of the most penalised players in this tournament. He concedes an average of 3.6 penalties per game. So they're obviously going to be looking to try and get at Ireland's scrum, because 16.5% of the penalties Ireland have conceded are from the scrum, which is really high for a team who is doing as well as we are. So that's going to be a big factor for England. They will be comfortable kicking and comfortable dealing with the aftermath, and we have to work around that as well. Wales, in trying to keep us at arm's length, played right into our game, where we had tons of space to run back. We had tons of time to pick a runner, to get our ruck game going, where we were able to hit through the gate of, we'll say, Furlong and Van der Fleer. They were able to clear us out at pace, and we were into settled offensive transition play, and then getting into settled phase play there afterwards, and started really pressurizing Wales. England, I don't think, will give us that sort of space to work. They'll want to keep this very, very claustrophobic. At halfback, they've got George Ford and Alex Mitchell. Alex Mitchell has been really good when it comes to the box kicking, his ability to, again, land those in a really distressingly accurate area where you're constantly under pressure with a bouncing ball and all this other stuff. And George Ford as well is at his best when he's kicking the ball. I think he's one of the best tactical kickers in the game. I think when he runs away from that at times, when he tries to, you know, when running offensive transitions that weren't on, there was a few moments against Scotland where they did that, where he just needed to go with the first scheme instinct that he would have had, which is kick this deep. Just kick it or go for an up and under, make them sweat. If he sticks and has tactical discipline here, he's a guy who can really hurt Ireland and look to try and get after our back three, which will be difficult, but there's some guys there they'll be looking to test out that they will feel haven't been tested out as of yet. So we will see how that goes. Up front is where it starts to get interesting. You have Ellis Genge, Jamie George and Dan Cole starting in the front row for them. Jamie George captaining the side from hooker. Mara Itoje and George Martin in the second row, with Ollie Chesham, Sam Underhill and Ben Earl in their back row. They've gone with a three-lock pack to start. Chesham, Martin and Itoje will be looking to try and get after Ireland in the line-out. Ireland have scored 13 tries from the line-out. So England are better than average at contesting in the line-out. They will be looking to try and upset our chain of possession there. If they'll feel if they can drag us below 80% completion at the line-out, we'll be a much reduced force. That's the gamble that they're making. Last year, the line-out was... It kind of degraded a little bit, not from a quality perspective in the Six Nations, but it became not a huge focus for our try scoring. It was on counter-attack. This year it's gone way back, way, way back. Now it's all about line-out. And how that goes is going to be hugely important. We have three primary jumpers here in Joel McCarthy, Tadhg Byrne and Peter Romani. Tadhg Byrne will be our primary target, with Peter Romani in secondary. Joel McCarthy jumping in as a kind of a tertiary secondary target as well. And how we go there is going to be hugely important. But looking at that England pack, just from a role perspective, big defensive focus. You look at Mara Itoje, George Martin, Ollie Chesham. That's a team where they know they're going to be kicking the ball to Ireland a lot. That Ireland, look, they'll be hoping to try and pressurise Ireland into, you know, maybe losing 30% of the kicks that they put to them. But once Ireland start getting into phase play, they've got one big target. That's Joel McCarthy. That's Tadhg Byrne, Caelan Doris. They'll be looking to try to hammer those guys. And that's a team, Itoje, Martin, Chesham, that's all about being big and physical in those tight areas and making life a living hell over the ball. You've Sam Underhill, Ben Earl, two small forwards. Ben Earl is a heavy strike wing forward. He's playing in the edge spaces. He's breaking off the back of the scrum with real power and aggression. Sam Underhill is kind of back to the defensive pressuring that he's so good at over the ball. He will tackle all day for you. He is really aggressive and gnarly at the defensive breakdown as well. He's going to make life very, very tough there, and especially on transition. So one of the first guys you will see when Ireland are kicking the ball, or when England are kicking the ball, when that ball comes down, Sam Underhill will be right there, and he'll be looking to try and pressurise whoever has that ball, or if it's an England guy has it, winning that ruck. But if England are going to win this game, Sam Underhill, I think, is going to have a very, very prominent one. On the replacements bench, they have Theo Dan, Joe Marler, Will Stewart, Chandler Cunningham-South, most English rugby name ever, Alex Dombrandt, Danny Kerr, Marcus Smith and Elliot Daly. So they do have a bit of a change up on the bench with Marcus Smith coming on at 10. You'd wonder if they have the offensive system to make that work. But I think, again, the big thing for England here will be their offensive transition. When Ireland give the ball back to them, or they can force turnovers on the right area of the field, do they have the accuracy to execute and to punish Ireland? And that's going to be a big factor as well, because Ireland have been giving up a lot of penalties. I think we have the most amount of penalties conceded in the Six Nations so far, which, again, given how well we've played over the first three games, seems like a bit of an aberration. But it's true. We've given up an awful lot of penalties. And looking at some of the numbers on them, we kind of tend to give them up at more or less the same points in the games. Like, we have been fantastic with regards to how our defensive work has been. We're giving up, like, ridiculously low amounts of 22 entries. We're being ridiculously efficient at converting them, like, ridiculously so. And that has been the kind of the main driver between, you know, for Ireland going as well as we have been. But just looking at some of the discipline stuff, like, we conceded 13 penalties against France, 13 against Wales, which, again, is, like, the competition average is 9.5. Like, we're at 12.3 per game, which is, like, not great. Like, we concede the majority of our penalties in the 10 minutes before halftime, the 10 minutes after halftime, and then the 10 minutes from between 50 minutes and 60 minutes. That's when the majority of our penalties have been conceded. We have most of those at the ruck, but too many, 16.2% at the scrum, which is, again, troublesome. Like, the total penalties conceded, Porter has conceded 8. A lot of those have been in the scrum. Joe McCarthy's at 4. And that's kind of, that's an area where I think England will be talking to the referees ahead of the game about. One of the things that they're going to try and point out is that, like, Ireland's discipline, and looking to try to punish Ireland in a way that Wales certainly didn't or couldn't, weren't able to. England's defence, on the other hand, is really, really good, or discipline rather, is very, very good. They tend to give away the majority of their penalties inside the first 10 minutes. Over eagerness, most of it is either offside, which you would expect given their high blitz, or at the ruck. They have, I think, was it 8 penalties conceded at the ruck, 42% of their penalties total, with 31.6% conceded by giving up offsides, with Ethan Roots and Maro Itoje as their two biggest penalty infringers. The majority of their penalties, by the way, are conceded in their own 22 and 50 meter line. So that's an area where obviously Ireland will be looking to try and pressurise them as well. Ireland, looking at where our zones where we concede them, is in the opposition's half of the field. So that's going to be something, obviously, where I think looking at how England will feel their best way into the game is going to be pressurising Ireland defensively, and looking to try and get at, or, well, from their defence will be pressurising Ireland while we're in attack. At the same time, you would look at Ireland's attack, how it's run. It's a blitz killer attack. And I think part of the reason, and this is the fascinating thing about the adjustments that teams make in the aftermath of the World Cup, like, Scotland have pulled their game way back. Like, Scotland kick more than England do. The only thing is, they kick way further on average. They kick further than anybody. So they're playing a kind of they're playing off-ball rugby, but with a counter-transition length defence, or a counter-transition length kicking. So that's what runs their system at the moment. And the reason why they're not getting a whole ton of criticism over it is because people just hate box kicks, and they hate short contestables. So Scotland kick long, so they don't have to deal with too many scrums as a result, because certainly not ones that they are looking to try and force. They want to get at you at the breakdown. So they're trying to get you on long transition sequences. Their back row and their back five is built to go after that style of game. England here with their back five, they've gone heavy, so they'll be kicking short. It's going to be a different type of game. But that's the sort of, that's how the teams have adjusted. Scotland felt that they needed to play a little bit more hands-off, a little bit more keeping teams at arm's length. Because again, one of their big issues, I think, is when teams make games tight. Scotland are trying to go, well, look, we're not going to have that game tight. We're going to play really long. We're going to make the field very, very big. And England have kind of gone in, you know, to continue with what they would have seen at the World Cup. They've doubled down on that. Ireland have changed up elements of what we're doing as well. Now, you can speculate as to why that was. Like, Ireland at the moment are playing, we'll say, for a kick-to-pass ratio, right? Coming up to the World Cup last year, Ireland were doing between 5 and 6 passes per kick, right, in the Six Nations and in the warm-up games. In the World Cup, whenever we played well, it was in that low, or we'll say that mid counter-transition range where Ireland would kick quite long. We wouldn't have, the passes, you know, relative to the kicks were relatively low in that counter-transition range. This year, with Jack Rowley as the number one guy at 10, all of a sudden, Ireland are playing closer to on-ball rugby. Munster play on-ball rugby. I've had a few questions in the TRK mailbag coming up, by the way. It's on the €5 tier. If you'd like to send in a question into the mailbag, info@threewaykings.com. I've had a few questions about that. I will get to those on that podcast. But when it comes to what Ireland are trying to do, we are passing way more than what we did last season. Our 10 this year is in the top 5 for carrying and the top 10 for metres gained. That was not the case last year. He's also passing. Jack Rowley is passing at an incredible rate. So his involvements per game are massive. I think he takes up 16% of all of Ireland's passes go through Jack Rowley. So, Ireland have changed up as well. Is that to do with how that game against New Zealand went at the end, where it felt that we were really uncomfortable going through that long sequence of play? And I completely get the argument that going on long sequences of rugby at test level is inefficient. By default, on-ball rugby is inefficient. You're accepting that inefficiency into your game. But there are two sides to it. And I think that there is the sort of the Springbok and South African thinking, which I think is getting into England's style at the moment as well, where they're very much about, why are we not just pressurizing the opposition in their half of the field? We can just kick the ball there and then hammer them defensively up there. They'll make a mistake and then we're in position where if they give us up a penalty, we'll kick for 3. If they turn the ball over, we'll pressurize them even more. That's where they want to play their rugby. On-ball rugby says that we're going to deny you the ball. You're going to try and come after us physically. We are prepared for this. We will pass more than you. We will pass around your blitz. We will hang on to the ball for long sequences. You will have to defend us. And maybe you'll force a turnover. Maybe we won't be accurate or whatever else. But our attacking layers, and you can tell this is what Ireland are running in training more often than not, big focus on this in training, you can see it. The short passes that Ireland do reduce the scope for turnovers, right? So now we do have a fair number of turnovers, to be, to be clear, but that's kind of baked into it. We will take that and go, right, well, we will work with that. We will give up, the odd turnover or whatever else, or the poor pass or whatever, because we want to boss possession. We want to boss time. If you're attacking on, and again, look, we just look at some of the base stats, right? When it comes to Ireland in this Six Nations, the number of tries per phase, right? Who has the most tries scored after 6+ or after 7+ phases? Ireland. Ireland have 6 tries after 7+ phases. That is more than, that it's the exact same amount as all the other teams in this tournament combined. Ireland had the most tries scored on 4-6 phases as well, by the way. 3 compared to 2 for England and France and Wales. So we're very much about staying patient with the ball. And because our passing range is so short, there isn't as much scope for error or intercepts. Again, you look at England, why are they passing longer? than everybody else because they're trying to play in transition. When they get that ball back, if they spot an opportunity, they'll go for it. And for Weah Boso, a guy who's going to be very dangerous on transition for them as well, or Boso. So that's going to be something I think that will be an interesting thing to track as we go into the summer months. Ireland against the Springboks is going to be, well, whatever way the Springboks look now, which, again, we don't know. We don't know what changes they're going to make to their system. I think, personally, I think England's, you know, route to go down into off-ball rugby like this, they've got to add on efficiency to their attack and whatever else. And some of their strike plays off the scrum and line-out are actually really good. That's going to be an area, too, for where I need to watch out. But I think that it's a mistake to go too far into the off-ball rugby thing. I personally think the game is going more, I've said this for a while, that the game is going towards on-ball rugby. That's what teams, or that's what the game wants to reward. They want to disincentivize kicking. That's what the game, like, the game doesn't want kicking. If you're looking at all the focus groups that World Rugby are on at the moment, where how you can, you know, improve the game, they're all talking about ball and flow. Right, it won't be long until legislation and law amendments and law interpretations will be that they don't want people box kicking. Certainly they don't want 10 second rucks with guys box kicking. They'll want the game to be played quicker. They want the game to be played with more flow. And to me, the best way to do that and to make sure you win that law change is by playing on ball rugby. If you're playing off ball rugby, you're putting yourself on the other side of the law interpretation. I think the way it's going to be in, from a defensive perspective, is I think it's going to be really hard now to force turnovers at the breakdown. I think it's been going that way for a while. I think that teams like Ireland in particular have realized that you can go with a ton of rucks. Like, you can play an extra two or three rucks in an attacking phase, even if you're coming in at fairly aggressive breakdown angles or whatever else, they're not being penalised. And you have to wonder, like, well, why are they not being penalised? I think part of the reason is they want the game to be played with possession back and forth, ball and flow. What they don't want is kicking battles. They don't want up and unders. They don't want scrums that are reset, this, that and the other. Anything that reduces those or means that there's a lot of, like, there's lots of passing, there's lots of running, there's lots of carrying, that's the game they want. If you're going the other way now, which is kicking the ball an awful lot, and the thing is, this is the way that traditionally the game has been won at test level, which is kick a lot, defensive pressure, big set piece. Those are usually the things that people associate with winning rugby at test level. I think the game is going in a different direction, though. And I think Ireland at the moment are playing the style that will work. And look, bear in mind, it all comes down to the referee as well on the day. The decision the decisions that they make with regards to what is a breakdown turnover. That's going to be hugely important in this game as well, because Sam Underhill is really dangerous over the ball. England have a lot of guys like Marwa Toje, Ellis Genge, Ben Earl, who are huge over the ball. Big defensive players there. Ireland do as well, but I feel that's going to be the key part of it, because Ireland are going to be running a lot of attacking phases. England are going to be defending over a lot of those phases. So we have to be like that. That's where that interpretation as to what a breakdown turnover is, the game will hinge on that. As I said earlier, I don't think this is going to be an Ireland procession. Look, it might well be, but I have a feeling this is going to be a very, very difficult game. So look, just going through the Ireland team, Hugo Keenan, Calvin Nash and James Lowe continue in the back three. Hugo Keenan comes in at fullback for Kieran Frawley, who drops to the bench. I will say as well, I was a bit unfair on Kieran Frawley last week when I spoke about his offensive ruck output. On the third watch, when I was doing my offensive ruck work ratings, he actually had the highest offensive ruck work score for any of the fullbacks that we've had in the last, since the start of the Six Nations. So basically, he outperformed or outscored Hugo Keenan at the breakdown. Now, I do feel that there were issues to his role set that don't quite suit what we do offensively, in that I think we need more of a strike runner at fullback in that three-quarter space rather than an alternate playmaker. Hugo Keenan suits that perfectly, but it was unfair of me to say that Kieran Frawley had a poor game at the ruck, because he didn't. He had a really good game. And so, yeah, I just wanted to put that out there at the start. Then you had Calvin Nash, who's had a really good tournament. He's going to come in for a different type of challenge in this game, though. He's been really going under the high ball from Munster and has been for the last 2 years, really. But this is going to be a big test. He's going to get a number of spiral bombs from George Ford. He's going to have Alex Mitchell there as well with Feyu Aboso and Tommy Freeman and Furbank and that English midfield coming at him under those high balls. They're going to challenge him. They're going to challenge James Lowe. And they're going to work out Hugo Keenan as well because they're going to figure he's come back mighty quick from his injury. So they're going to challenge him as well. In midfield, Robbie Henshaw and Bundy Aki. There was a decision to be made here where Andy Farrell could have brought back Gary Ringrose right in, but made a distinct decision on the bench to go with a 6-2 split. That probably took Ringrose out of this game. See, again, I think you can go a little bit too reactive on this, where looking at what England are good at, I was thinking, you know, would you go with Gary Ringrose? Like, Gary Ringrose is not a massively, he's not a massive cog offensively for Ireland. His offensive ruckwork is really good, although I would expect Hugo Keenan to take up more of that in this game. It'll be vitally important, actually, that he is good in that area of the field. But I could see an argument for bringing Gary Ringrose in at 13 instead of Henshaw, just because of how good he will be at shutting them down on their transition. But that could be a little bit too reactive as well, because I know Robbie Henshaw's been playing really well, as has Bundy Aki. It's going to be hugely important, them being able to play the game that they have for the last, well, when they've last played together. So, yeah, look, I think that I've no issue with whatsoever. But I could see an argument for bringing Ringrose straight back in as well at the same time. At halfback, Jack Crowley and Jemison Gibson-Park start again at halfback. As I said elsewhere this week, I think it was on Joe Nash there a while ago on Live 95, speaking about Jack Crowley. And I was on a podcast there earlier in the week about it as well, about how seamless it's been since he's come in as the main man. Like, again, I was expecting that Ireland would have something of the, you know, distress levels that France have shown without Antoine Dupont, and like there hasn't been any issue whatsoever. Now maybe this is the game where it'll show up, but it just feels that Jack Crowley has been so comfortable at just slotting in and playing his game and not feeling that he has to change up what he does to, you know, to work with the system. He's working the system for himself and making, like, bringing what he brings to the game, which is athleticism, power on the gain line, variety. He's working all those into his game, and his relationship with Gibson Park has actually been really good. They've worked that really well. Gibson Park has probably been the standout player for Ireland, I think, in the back line over the last couple of games. The quality of passing he's got is really, really good. His accuracy is really good. The pace he plays at, very, very good. And Conor Murray's on the bench for this. I think when it's a 6-2 split, you kind of have to go with Conor Murray. I personally would like to see Craig Casey there, but when it's a 6-2 split, they will need to go with more size, because there is a potential there for if we'll say Robbie Henshaw picks up an injury, where Kieran Frawley goes in at 12, and then if Hugo Keenan picks up an injury, then it'll be Jack Crowley going to 15 probably, and Conor Murray playing at 10. I think when you roll the dice, because Craig Casey covers 9, Gibson Park covers the wing, Murray will cover 10 maybe and 9, so I think that's probably what the thinking is there. I would have gone with Craig Casey myself, but I feel that Conor Murray is kind of on the downslope of his career at this stage, and what an all-time great career it has been, but that's my own opinion on it. Yeah, so then we're looking in the forward pack. Porter, Sheehan, Furlong starting in the front row, of course, with Joe McCarthy and Tadhg Byrne in the second row. Peter Romani captains the side in the number 6 jersey with Josh van der Fleer and Caelan Doris. That is our best starting pack, I think, at the moment. It's got everything. It's got, like, physical power with Sheehan, with Joe McCarthy, with Caelan Doris, and that kind of swing role in the back row. And then you've got really good, and Tadhg Byrne as well as a swing lock. But the power at the breakdown is the big, big factor for this starting pack. Van der Fleer, Doris had such a game against Wales at the breakdown. Like, fucking hell. Like, he is some operator, him. Tadhg Furlong is not the Tadhg Furlong, you know, the all singing, all dancing, you know, handing fellas off, you know, stepping fellas in a phone booth. If you're under the age of 40, by the way, a phone booth used to be a place, a little box on the streets where you could go in there and there was a phone and you would just like beep, 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 beep and call up your mother or your father to come and get you if you were stuck up in the city, as I had to do on a few occasions. Anyway, so like Tadhg Furlong now is, a lot of his explosivity is in the breakdown. He is dominating guys there. Like, the numbers he's putting up are huge. I think it's a more sustainable way for him to play. I think that, you know, when guys get to a certain age, as a prop in particular, if your game was based off big power carries, then you've got a shelf life. And I think that a lot of injuries that Tadhg had over the last couple of years were kind of based on that role set. So he's pulled it back. And now a lot of his explosivity happens at the ruck, and he is very strong in that area of the field. Porter is our most important player in that front five, I think. And even with Joe McCarthy, even with Tadhg Byrne, Andrew Porter is the sign of, like, he is synonymous with winning Ireland teams. And, like, he will be under huge pressure in the scrum here, technically, from Dan Cole, and then physically from Will Stewart. But that's going to be where the game's going to hinge, as is Tadhg Furlong versus Ellis Genge. England have done really well in the scrum against Ireland with that combination. So we'll see how that, like, that's going to be a key area. If Ireland can just lock England out of the game there and not concede 3 or 4 penalties, that'll go a long way to negating their kicking game as well. But we will wait, like, that's going to be a key area of how the game is, how the game plays out. And like I said, in the back five, it's a massive game for Joe McCarthy. I look at England's back five and the build they've gone for, Itoje, Martin and Chessam, and think that's a reaction of sorts to Joe McCarthy. He is vital to this Ireland team because he gives us a power forward role set. We need that. If you're going to play on-ball rugby, you need power forwards. You can't just have a team of support forwards who are going to be just carrying over and over again into, you know, brick walls. You need guys who are going to get over the gain line for you. Joe McCarthy does that. And whatever inefficiencies that there are in his offensive ruck game, who gives a shit about that? He's 6'6". He's 120 kg. He gets over the gain line, and that's the most important thing. And England are going to set up with Itoje in particular, who is, at this stage in his career, he didn't become the all-encompassing complete lock that I think maybe he looked like he would be in the in the late 2010s. It hasn't turned out that way for him. Offensively, he's not a massive factor for England. Of course, look, if he's running from close range, he can certainly score tries and win collisions. But in the middle of the field, not a guy who I think Ireland will be overly concerned with offensively. But defensively, he is a fucking freak. Defensive line out, defensive maul, tackling, defensive breakdown. He is nasty in that area of the game. And that's going to be a massive battle. Joe McCarthy versus Marlow Itoje versus George Martin versus Ollie Chessam. That's going to be blockbuster stuff. Because they'll be talking all week about, you know, Joe McCarthy. They'll be looking at the video. They'll be seeing when he's getting over the game line for them there. They'll be seeing, oh, well, Wales got a lot of energy when they stopped him dead there. So maybe if we load up with the size and power there, because we got to match this guy. Again, like you look at that Welsh, or that English back five, and again, look, we'll just have a quick look at some of their baseline stats here. You've got George Martin. He's coming up on 120 himself. Then you've got Itoje. Obviously, it doesn't really matter what size he is, because defensively, he's just one of the best in the world. And we just look at Ollie Chessam as well, another Leicester Tiger who's 23 years of age, 6'7", coming up on 120 himself. There will be blood there. There's going to be some big physicality, and that always happens in the early going to these games. England will be looking to try and impose themselves in the tackle. Ireland will have a lot of early possession. So we'll see how that goes. It's going to be hugely, hugely important. But our offensive breakdown is going to be hugely important as well. Because England, they have a lot of jackal threats. They have a lot of poaching threats. Byrne, O'Mahony. Byrne actually starts games quite slowly at the breakdown and then kind of builds momentum as he goes. I think early on we'll need to see a lot of action at the offensive breakdown. And how we go there will determine the flow of the game overall. We've gone with a 6-2 split in the bench. Ronan Kelleher, Keane Healy, Finlay Beelam. Ian Henderson in for James Ryan, with Ryan Baird and Jack Conan continuing their roles off the bench. James Ryan got injured in training. It looks like a torn bicep is the report. If that's the case, his season is done, if it's a torn bicep. Which is a big loss for Leinster, I think, in that he's very important to the way that they seem to be playing at the moment. For Ireland, I feel that I would have gone with Ian Henderson myself anyway, even if James Ryan was fit. I think Ian Henderson is closer to the power forward build that we get from Joe McCarthy than what James Ryan is at this stage of his career. So that would give us more continuity there and allow us to replace O'Mahony and Van der Fleer in and around the 50-55 minute mark to get Baird and Conan on the field. Because again, I have a feeling that we will need to get the power levels up as we go into that 50-60 minute block. And because again, I have a feeling this game could be quite tight. So England will continue to give us possession. We'll need to finish big, I think. We'll need a lot of power, I think, to finish this off. So yeah, I have a feeling it's going to be tight. You need size and power off the bench to finish off those what we assume will be a tight game. So yeah, thank you very much for joining me. I will have a bit of coverage tonight on the Secret Club for the under 20 game, and I'll have a few other bits and pieces as we get this game going on Saturday. I'll have TRK radio after the game and the Wally ratings and the Blood or the whatever podcast I do, the 5-star podcast will come as well as we round out the weekend. So thank you very much for joining me. Thank you very much for being a TRK subscriber. I will talk to you again very, very soon.